superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Danny Katz. Today I am joined by Adam Schell, who is the founder of Brain Supreme. And today's conversation was way more fun than I knew that we were going to have, because we geek out on psilocybin, microdosing, brain performance optimization, and then we delve deep into conspiracy and flat earth and all of the good things. So I know you're going to love this conversation. Before we dive in, I'm reminding you to click that subscribe button, to like, to share, to comment, to sign up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com. It's the very best way to ensure that we stay in touch. I'm also reminding you that I have a phenomenal course called Pop Propaganda, which is the world's only digital media literacy course for teens as well as for grown-ups alike. The course features 11 video modules, each accompanied by a PDF with extra links. There are illustrations and animations and my very over-the-top ridiculous gesticulations. The key to this course is that once you finish it, you will be able to spot propaganda in an instant, and you will no longer be susceptible to its negative frequencies / distortions. Adam and I spoke about propaganda in today's conversation, so it felt extra uber on point to mention it. Also, Adam was very kind to share a promo code for you and me and our High Vibe Word Up tribe. So as you are inspired to delve into the Brain Supreme world, you can use the code DannyKatz, all one word, doesn't matter if it's uppercase or lowercase, to get 15% off your order plus free shipping. It's such a win-win. All right, that does it for housekeeping. Buckle up and prepare to enjoy my conversation with Adam Schell. Adam Schell, how are you?
I'm terrific. I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Great. I'm so happy to have you here. Full disclosure, I am loaded up on your genius supplement today. So we will see how much smarter that makes me.
Great. Have you, I mentioned this to you before we had the podcast, because I like there to be, I feel it's a more meaningful podcast. I hit you up and sent you samples and stuff like that. Have you had any noticeable benefits? I mean, anything appreciable?
What I've noticed, because I do take different brain supplements every day, so I have been enjoying the genius supplements, and there's one, is it called Feel Good? The Moon
Feel Good
one? Yeah. Feel Good, I'm having a really wonderful time with.
Oh, great. Great.
Yes.
It's funny how it works with Brain Supreme, is that if it's going to work, it tends that it's going to work. Like, you're going to notice something, because that means your psilocin receptors. Sorry, I just got a fire ant bite on my foot and it's making me crazy. Ooh. We have chickens and stuff like that, so I was doing something. Okay, so if Brain Supreme, if psilocybin at a microdosing level is going to work for you, like, all our products are going to work. But then there's almost always like one that seems to, that's the one, or at least for time being, that's the one that works best. So I'm not surprised to hear that. That's kind of in keeping with how it goes.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite of your products?
I do. So I'm like really into, I'm a super busy like sports dad, two kids, they're both super athletes. You know, we got about 30 hours a week of practices and schlepping. And I was saying before the podcast began, if you're a conscientious, you know, human being about, so for me, like, the main priority of parenting is biological preservation these days, like, because I believe like they are after your children's biology. So I was joking before the podcast, like, if you cook your own food and fold your own laundry, and then you've got two super athletes who train in the morning and sports after school, like, you only have so much time in the day. So I'm always looking to habit stack and amplify. So I stack the athlete formula and the genius formula in a performance dose protocol, which for me right now is Monday, Wednesday, Friday before our morning training sessions. I microdose a little heavier. I'll take two athlete and two genius. So it's a slightly more perceptible performance dose about 40 minutes before the gym. So I hit the gym in flow state. My workouts are inspired and wonderful and incredibly enjoyable. And you kind of like enjoy the pain of it a little bit. It's like a pleasant, you know, masochism in a way. And And then the benefits, the microdose linger throughout the day and the next day after that. And then I do it again on Wednesday, I do it again on Friday, and I take the weekend off. So I do an every other day, or it can sometimes be one day on, 2 days off performance protocol.
Ooh, okay, I'm writing this down. I did
It's
actually. Oh, go
all
ahead.
on the website. We have a free coaching course on the website, but basically we're kind of jumping all around, which is fine. There's three ways to approach microdosing. Okay. Well, first off, our microdosing philosophy. So we've really jumped right in. Brain Supreme is a premium microdosing life optimizing supplement where we take 100 milligrams of psilocybin, high quality psilocybin that we actually a strand, a mushroom that we created, and we blend it in with herbs, nootropics, amino acids, and nutrients for increased neurocognition. That's genius. Feel good is our heart formula, emotional well-being, and so forth. And then Athlete is our athletic and performance and testosterone boosting formula, natural testosterone boosters. Everything we do is like completely biodynamic, as organic and pure as it can possibly be. Plus, we grow our own secret ingredient. And then we have Black Stack, which is our extra strength. And we take 300 milligrams of psilocybin and we blend it in with a nano curcumin, ginger, and high quality vitamin C. But
Okay.
what we're really going for, Brain Supreme, is life optimization, high performance, well-being, and so forth. I don't have any problem with it, but we're not a recreational shroomy kind of thing. We're really about. So I'm very much in this, like, I just turned 55. I still got to grind. I got to push this brand. I got the young kids and the wife. We got to go. So I'm all about like what can give me a little bit of 5-10% jump in my overall efficacy in life.
I love that. That's always what I'm looking for. I was an early like tonic bar at Erewhon
Oh,
devotee
yeah.
way back in the day,
By
right?
the way, where did you live in LA? Because
I was always like Hollywood Hills, Beechwood Canyon, Silver Lake
did
Hills
you ever
area.
go did you ever go to the Hollywood YMCA back in the day?
Yeah, I swam laps there every morning at 5 a.m.
You know, I was Yoga Adam. I was like that mat to mat, like Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, that crazy yoga class. Could you seem vaguely familiar to me?
You know what? And I did come to your class a couple times with my friend John, who got me into the Y, which was to this day, because I'm a gym girl, I play racquetball. And I forgot to mention that when I took your athlete formula before racquetball, I dominated and I had so
By
much
the way,
energy.
like this whole new like super successful, affluent, type A, 50-year-old, semi-retired, just manning their investors, becoming obsessed with pickleball. Like that's my biggest expanding market right now is like
Really?
the alpha type 50-year-old pickleball player who's nuts for pickleball. Like the ball's that big, and so I've heard that before. Yeah.
Okay, so
That's part of the flow state that, psilocybin, the microdosing puts you in this increased flow state. So, increased neurocognition. In fact, they've done studies at the Dell Center for Psychedelic Research and Therapeutics here at University of Texas. They tested tap testing in geriatrics. And about 25 minutes after microdose, there was about a 13% increase in a geriatric tap test.
oh, that's interesting. So
Yeah.
my ego is freaking out right now because it really wants me to differentiate between racquetball and pickleball because we make
I get
fun
it. No, I get
of
it. I get it.
the
Oh, yeah.
pickleball players. But what I was saying was like, I so miss the Hollywood Y. Like, that was such a phenomenal
Oh, my God.
gym and a phenomenal community. And I
At
just.
that time, it was like magic.
Yeah, it
So
really was.
it was magical. It was like 2007 to 2014, like the vibe in LA was really good. There was prosperity and there was a good eco consciousness, and you could still have conversation and liberals could still like talk about the pharmaceutical industry and vaccines being potentially dangerous. And we were all deceived by Obama at the time, or some of us more than others, but like
Right.
it in some ways it kind of unified us. And I used to teach some classes at the Hollywood Y where like I'm not like a I'm not a terribly harsh critic of myself, but I'm pretty objective on myself and hard on myself. Like I always feel like I definitely should lose 35 pounds because I really should lose 35 pounds, because what I'm saying, I would look so much better. And I was a form I can hold it because I'm 6'3" college football player, linebacker, blah, blah, blah. But I'm very honest with myself, how I'm doing, performing, what I'm good at, what I'm not good at it. But literally, I would teach some classes at the Hollywood Y, that the whole class would be flow state. And I would be like, And it would be mat to mat, and there'd be 80 people packed in there, everybody sweating. And this is when, like, before the air had been poisoned and sweat had been poisoned to, like, did they get the jab? Did they not get the jab? Do I want to touch their sweat? And, like, before everything had been weaponized. And it was just the humider and danker. And the more you could, like, make a smiley face on the window afterward, the better. And it was just like, I say, like, I don't know if I've ever done anything in my life better than this last 95 minutes that just unfolded. Like, it was like amazing. And it wasn't just me. It was everything kind of coming together. And that would happen a lot there. It was quite magical.
Yeah, it really was magical. And those were the days. I'm glad that we share that. So what I loved about the tonic bar, which is what I love about what you're doing, is thinking outside of the box and starting to blend. You know, what made the tonic bar so cool was like Ayurvedic herbs, Chinese tonic herbs, medicinal mushrooms, cacao. It was like taking from all sorts of
Truth.
different
Wasn't
realms.
that guy's name? That guy's name was Truth.
It was truth. And you're the first person I've heard of who's starting to mix different herbs with psilocybin. So I'm curious to know how you got into this.
I went to Northwestern. I played college football. I never put myself on like a traditional career path. I don't know why. I was writing and doing some short films and trying to make a movie. And I had chefed always, and I had like a side hustle. The way people use waitering, I used chefing. I just could always cook, and I was doing some like high-end private chefing and catering in Los Angeles, and I started teaching yoga, and I had like a whole celebrity clientele. But I was in grad school and pushing this novel. So I wrote this is a long story how I got into mushroom business, but I wrote this novel called Tomato Rhapsody, and it sold
Great
them.
title. I
Thank
love
you.
the
Every and
title.
everybody thought I was nuts. I was wasting my 30s. I wasn't like career focused. I was just writing this book. You know, my family was like, what are you doing? Blah, blah. Sold in 4 days, sold for over $1 million to a division of Random House called Bantam. It was a multi-book deal. It was pushed on an aggressive schedule so that it would be a 9-month lead as opposed to an 18-month lead.
Okay.
And all of which ended up being a mistake in retrospect. And everybody had kind of thought I had made it. But between the purchasing of the manuscript and the release of the novel, the whole 2008, 2009 housing crisis happened and the economy crashed. The whole publishing world implosion happened where Amazon really asserted it. Everybody, the number one, two, and three at the division of Random House that I was with, everybody who bought my book all got fired. And then Michael Jackson died the day my novel came out. I'll never forget, I was at Book Soup. I was doing an event at Book Soup in Hollywood Boulevard. It was our
That's
book
a
launch
good
event.
place for a book launch event. That
Yeah,
says a lot.
it was a big deal. And literally, like the day before the event, Michael Jackson died. And like every interview, every review, everything just went to kind of shit. And
Right.
they canceled the second book. They canceled the audiobook. They sued me for the advance back. Like it totally threw my life upside down. Yeah, it got real shitty. And I was, you know, like, oh shit, what am I going to do next? And so at the time, we were living on the backside of the Malibu Mountains,
Okay.
going to the Muse School,
Okay.
which the Muse School was started by James Cameron's wife
I know it.
and brother-in-law and so forth, the Titanic director. And on paper, the school was amazing. It was an incredibly ecological consciousness to it, student-directed education, committed veganism. This is before vegans had totally lost their minds.
Right.
And I wasn't a vegan, but you know, everything was kind of cooler back then. And the school ended up being like completely batshit crazy, but I had started a soccer not for profit at the time, and because of we were living and going to school, like we had like celebrity kids on the team, and you know, huge old world like Illuminati families. You know, this was before I was really aware of all that. Like it was crazy. One of the dads was like, "Hey man, is the rain noise too loud? Or are we okay?"
We're good.
Okay, good. And the
But I'm
and
glad
one
to
of
know
the
we both have it.
yeah. Oh,
Yeah,
it's raining there.
it's raining and hailing.
Oh wow, it just started pouring here in Texas. So, which is great. So, one of the dads on the team was like, "Hey man, I like the way you operate. You're getting all this shit done. You got this great coach from Europe. You built this not-for-profit. These families is like, what are you doing?" I went, "Well," he said, "come to this meeting with me." So he introduces me to the California cannabis industry, and at that time, the bar in the California cannabis industry was so low that just honest and competent was the new extraordinary. And I really didn't know much about weed. I mean, I might puff one a joint like 3 times a year, but I was never a big weed guy. I'd get two in my head, self-conscious, and all this kind of weird shit. And basically within 3 years, I went from being like a broke ass fool, a broke ass novelist to like a multimillionaire running a statewide distribution company up and down the state with not crazy money, but like I was making the first time I left real money. Like I was doing great and everybody was doing great. We had two distribution vans. I had a whole security detail. I had 100 farms on the Rolodex just because, like, just treating people like I wasn't a weed guy. I became a weed guy, but still, like, the business skills of respect and interest and how you doing. And, these farms that would be in the hills of Humboldt County, like, I would call them, hey, guys, you want a sandwich as I'm on my way there? Because I know you're in the sticks. I'd be like, who is this dude? So I loved everybody, and everybody loved doing business with me, and it went great. But the whole time I was very cash positive. I was never like a really big weed guy. Now I can tell a great bag of weed from a quarter mile away these days. But back then, I was, and I had had these psychedelic experiences as a young person that were very formative to me. And I had just heard Paul Stamets, credit where credit's due, pre-COVID Paul Stamets, right? And this term about microdosing, and it like really intrigued me. And I was, God. So I knew somebody who was growing some mushrooms. They started giving me some mushrooms, and they was like mildly effective. I don't know if they were great mushrooms. And then I take so many other supplements, I started combining it, and I'm like, I think there's something to this. Like, I think this could be done better. Like, and it just so turns out that there was one little middle class enclave where I lived at the time, and there was a community center, and there'd be a sauna, and one guy. I would show up from the sauna, and our friend, he's an Eastern European guy, and we would talk in the sauna. And then it turns out he had a little cannabis grow, so we started talking about that. And then, I mentioned I'm not really a big weed guy, but I'm very interested in psychedelics and that space and mushrooms. And he's like, oh, I come from 4 generations of mushroom foragers. And I was like, hey, man, if I funded it out, you think you could put up a mushroom grow? And I have this idea. He's like, I love that idea. Literally within 6 months, it was like the world aligned, and he was one of the best mushroom growers. I think he might be the most sophisticated, best mushroom grower in the country right now. He's now my partner.
Wow.
And we then started growing a bunch of different mushrooms because he speaks a couple different languages. We could bring in genetics from Europe and other areas. And we started to propagate mushrooms, and we started to blend them with nootropics and herbs and amino acids and going for this kind of perfect combination. And then one day, our facility, we had this glorious mutation that the four different types of mushrooms we were growing kind of merged into one. And we got this perfect specimen. And we propagated it. It looks so different. We propagated it, and we created the Brain Supreme proprietary mushroom. And then we basically hit upon the perfect blend of nutrients and nootropics to create our genius formula. Now, during this whole time, these couple years of development, the cannabis industry, I made a terrible mistake. I got out of my distribution lane, and I bought farms. So I figured
Okay.
what could go wrong? I'm buying it for $1,000 and driving it to the city and selling it for 1400. Everybody's doing great. What if I grew it? So I had an opportunity with a partner to buy into a couple really big license projects. And literally within 2 years, I had lost every cent to my name and then some. It was terrible. So the first year we had fires. So we lost a projected 50,000 pounds to fire damage. So if any of your listeners have ever seen like a High Times photo of that glorious, like sticky trichome covered honey glistening bud a week before harvest. So, those little tendrils with the glistening element on the end, that's called trichomes. And trichomes are like honey, and anything that's in the environment sticks to the trichomes. So, you don't have to burn down if you're in the cannabis industry. If you have a fire 50 miles away and the wind changes direction and it's 2 weeks before harvest, you're ruined. Your whole product's going to smell like smoke. And
Oh.
cannabis is, and cannabis, large scale distribution level, cannabis is primarily sold by smell. If it doesn't, it can look kind of lousy, it can be small buds, anything. But if it doesn't have the right nose, you're screwed. So the first year, all our product was unsellable. And then I had to put good money after bad and fund these things out. And at the same time, distribution starts to tank because there was massive overexpansion in the industry. California licensed many more farms than they could legally distribute. All the best farmers from Humboldt started to take advantage of these hemp laws in Oregon and put up huge multi-acre, like 30, 40, 50 acre projects. And the thing in the cannabis industry is there's no commodities exchange where people are speculating and predicting the market. So nobody really knows what's going on. Like nobody knows that some guy from, you know, the hills in Humboldt, you know, or Mendocino County, who's been stacking, you know, several hundred thousand dollars away for 20 years, just took $7 million up to Oregon and made a 40-acre farm. Like no one really knows that.
Right.
Until all that product starts to infiltrate in the market. And at the same time, the fucking Canadians, because their cannabis industry went to shit, they basically turned a blind eye to pumping all this illegal weed into New York City and Chicago and the big markets. So yeah, like I really know what went down in the cannabis industry. So you had what used to be $2,000 to $3,000 indoor pounds flooding into the New York City market at $700. And then you had these really good outdoor pounds that used to be able to purchase for $1,000 and sell for $1,500. Now those pounds became basically worthless. So it cost you about $400 to grow it, trim it, and pay the taxes on it, right? And the market by my second year had collapsed to $350 a pound. So you couldn't even distribute your way out of it. Like you were in so much trouble.
Right.
And then, so it's good money after bad. The distribution market's collapsing. We had this whole explosion of California growers going into Oregon and Washington and producing massive projects. And then you had the fucking Canadians, you know, infiltrating the whole US market with their indoor weed, which they were terrible at first, but by 2020, they had gotten better at growing weed and they could really, so they completely disrupted the, you know, the flow of cannabis domestically through the country, ruined a lot of people's lives. And then we had floods the next year. So we had an inverted atmospheric river the day before harvest and literally 50,000 pounds molded out. And then after that, I was completely ruined, like scary ruined, like Netflix series bad, like couldn't pay workers, couldn't pay farmers, like everything was gone. And then all the distribution centers that I had set up, they all started getting robbed and everybody started splitting because the prices collapsed. So it was just the absolute worst time in my life. I was 263 pounds. I'm not really prone to addiction and abusive behavior, thankfully, but I was 263 pounds. I was hardly working out. I'm working all the time. I'm trying to just hustle and sell whatever I can. COVID policies in Northern California, we had moved up to Northern California to be closer to the farms. COVID policies in Northern California were completely deranged and insane. We lived in the least vaccinated county in the United States, going to the least in the least vaccinated town in the United States, going to the least vaccinated school in the United States. And within 6 months, all these old hippies wanted everybody jabbed up, masked up. And, you know, so like they all lost their minds. So
was
the
this
whole
Nevada City?
No, this was Santa Rosa, Sebastopol, the Waldorf school there.
Got it.
And I'm not actually being accurate. Like that Waldorf school was the least vaccinated school in the United States. And within 1 year, all those hippies were a bunch of jabbed up lunatics who couldn't wait to, you know, who wanted all the kids double masked and, you know, 6 and 20 feet away from them and jabbed up. So yeah, they all lost their minds.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I heard that all the Waldorf schools went.
They did.
Yeah.
Cuckoo. Yeah. Which is so ironic, sidebar, because if you read the early works of Rudolf Steiner, he literally used the term. He said, there is going to come a pharmaceutical product that is designed to steal the souls of human beings. And then they participated in it with a willingness and at a level that was like, I just listened to your podcast with Robert Frost.
Robert Forte.
And it's the delusion that you talked about, the self-deception, the delusion. Like it was just mind-boggling. So all this shit is collapsing, but here's the brain supreme part. We had just figured out the combination of nutrients, herbs, and our own proprietary mushroom that made the genius formula. And I'll never forget, I'm dry. I couldn't afford my staff anymore. You know, my life's in shambles. It's just a disaster. You know, there's two ways in life you can be an asshole or a scumbag. You know, you can
just
be a scum. Well, it's pretty broad, my two categories. You can be a scumbag by commission, the deeds that I commit to doing. Yep. And you can hurt people and be a scumbag by, sorry, you can be a scumbag by omission.
Yep.
And omission is the things that we omit in our thinking, the way we hurt people and injure people with thoughtlessness or because of bad circumstances. And I had hurt so many people. I mean, who would have ever thought the price collapse, 2 years of crops destroyed, you know, everything ruined. So investors' monies, friends' monies, my God, I mean, everything just went so bad. And I was so incredibly depressed. and I'm just treading water. And we had just developed this genius formula, and I was driving up the Pacific Coast on the 101 with an, you know, a van full of weed that I was trying to sell somewhere or do something. I don't even remember, but I just remember I had taken two genius capsules that we had just developed, or what's now called genius. And I literally was looking around this beautiful scenery. I think I was somewhere around like San Luis Obispo, north of it. I was making a run from LA. And I felt my brain go thunk to this, like, I wasn't stoned, I wasn't shroomy. I just felt a new operational level that was, it felt like, oh, I'm home. Like, this is how my brain's meant to feel. Like, this is the level I'm meant to operate at. I wasn't stoned, I wasn't high, I wasn't shroomy, but I had a clarity of thought. I had an optimism about my life. I had a connection to the sacred that it's all going to be okay. Like, I can work through this. It's going to be okay. And it was, I was like, oh, we're really onto something. Like, we're, this is something. And then we started beta testing it, and other people started to have a similar reaction. And I was like, oh, okay, here we go. So as the weed industry collapsed, I threw myself entirely into Brain Supreme. Mm-hmm. Working the building up, and that's the real, the genesis story of it. So one aspect of my life completely fell apart, and then the other came together.
And had you, that's great. I'm glad it's all evening out and you're on the up. Had you been into microdosing and psychedelics before? And what was your experience with that?
I had done a couple psychedelic trips, but the one that happened to me as a 19-year-old is the one that I never forgot. So my brother's 4.5 years older than me. So people who have children, like if your kids are 2 years apart, like they're both into Pokemon at the same time. If your kids are 4.5 years apart, like they're in different game spaces. They might get along and they might be cool and respectful, but like the bonding, like sibling bonding, like isn't quite the same. So my brother and I were always cool. We always loved each other, but we were 4.5 years apart, which, you know, 12 and 16 is a big difference, you know, but suddenly you're 19 and you're 24 and you're like, oh, like 19 and 23, like we're in the same kind of wavelength. So we did a trip over spring break. He was in grad school. I was in college. We went down to see my mom, who was living in Florida at the time, and he had a bag of mushrooms. And we drove down to Key West to do something interesting. And this was 1990 Key West. So I've been to Key West since. I don't know what it's like, but like it was like funky and weird and wonderful and just like the bottom vestibule of the United States in so many ways. Like it's literally the most southern point in the United States, just drop there. And we didn't know what we were doing. We ordered some tea at a cafe in the morning. We chopped up the mushrooms, threw them in the tea. We added some honey. We added some lemon, which is actually, as I know now, like the lemon technique, which is both citric.
Oh, Adam, we lost you a little bit. Are you still there? Can you hear me? Oh, I think we've lost the sound for some reason. If you can hear me, we lost the sound. We lost the sound.
Biggest brothers we've ever
Oh,
had.
There, like, we go.
We were on. We back?
Adam, you dropped out after the lemon technique. If you wouldn't mind catching us up.
Yeah, so I'll roll it back. So cool. Unknowingly, we had developed, we did the best mushroom for a recreational and one of the best techniques, which is you first do a lemon extraction and then you do a hot water extraction. We unknowingly kind of simultaneously did both. So we chopped up the mushrooms, lemon, hot water, you know, chamomile tea, some ginger tea, bunch of local honey in there at this cafe. I drank it down, you know, swallowed the little mushroom pieces in there. And then we had the best time of our lives together. Just, aww. We were riding these cruiser bikes around and we were laughing and everything was so wonderful and delightful. It's just great. But there was a moment there where in Key West, the beaches have these kind of pine trees, these kind of southern pines. They're sparse, they're spread out. And you can see through the rocky beach to the water. And I was holding these two cruiser bikes as my brother ran into the bathroom. I was 19 at the time. And out of nowhere, this Vietnam veteran just popped out of nowhere. And so this is 1990. So, you know, Vietnam is just 15, 16 years kind of past, 17 years past. And he pops out of nowhere. And he's very sweet. I wasn't, like, intimidated. Plus, I was a huge college football player. And he started telling me about how his Vietnam experiences, just sharing with me, like, how he was a prisoner of war and he was captured and he was kept in one of those mud pens up to his neck and all his mates who were captured died. He's the only one that survived. And ever since this happened, like, he could only live in nature. So he's outside now, and he's sharing with me the story. And I'm this completely altered state of his pain, his experience. Me, it was so visceral. It was such a profound connection of our shared humanity. I'd never, as a 19-year-old, experienced anything like that. I also been recruited by all the military academies, and if I didn't have a shoulder injury, I might have been. If I wasn't disqualified, I might have even gone to them. But it was such a spontaneous recognition of our shared oneness and the implications of violence, and that something happened to him as a 19-year-old, and I'm 19 at the time, and he's now 38. So he's had twice his life to overcome this, and he can't overcome this singular experience as a 19-year-old. It just blew my mind. It's altered state. Like, this is a fragile thing, man. The way we treat each other is like hugely important. And I've had other experiences since then, and they've been wonderful and so forth. But that experience as a young person, it so shifted my consciousness. So, like, the first Gulf War happened, and I'm like, I don't think this is a good idea. I'm not going rah-rah, you know? 9/11 happened, and I'm like, this doesn't seem right. This isn't a good idea. I don't want to go kill those people, and I don't think those people want to die, and I don't think they necessarily want to kill me. Like, what? So it so shifted my mind in perpetuity that as I got older, and then I realized I wanted to come back into the space. So I could talk about other experiences I've had, but that was the formative one that as a 19-year-old that changed my life and permanently changed my thinking and gave me that kind of spontaneous emotional understanding of myself, and then and the fragility of our own psychology, and then our deep connection to one another. So yeah, I had that was it.
As far as macrodosing, microdosing, I know you mentioned you listened to my show with Robert Forte. I'm guessing it was the microdose show.
Who's your most recent one? Who's your most recent one where he's in Greece?
So we talked about Fadiman and microdosing. I got into microdosing in graduate school. I just had insomnia, and so I was like, well, as long as I'm going to be up all night, I might as well just take a quarter tab of acid and make it a little more exciting. And I would take apart all my IKEA furniture and put it back together again. But had you gotten into like had you gotten into the microdosing trend pre-Brain Supreme, and then like what inspired you to switch it up? Because it feels like so many people are just like, I want to microdose. They don't necessarily care what they're microdosing, they just like the verb, you know? And then they're like, there are some cool points around it, but like, where was the moment where you were like, wait a minute, there's a lot more we could do with this?
Well, I knew it was kind of coming in the zeitgeist as I started to hear it talk about more and more, but it was my own personal experience. Like, after we developed what's now known as our genius formula, where I realized, like, oh, this is my brain is operating in a way like I think a lot of people could really benefit from this. So that was kind of it for me. So I was a little, I mean, look, I'm not going to put on airs. I wasn't tuned in and paying attention to what was happening in kind of the zeitgeist enough. I didn't know. I knew I would listen to Joe Rogan sometimes on the way up, so I knew who Stamets was. I also knew about him from the film that he was in at the TED lecture and so forth. So I knew about Stamets, and I'd known about microdosing, but I didn't know that it was going to be such an emerging trend. I had a personal experience. I was looking for a hack myself. I was late 40s. And I realized I've got a lot to do, especially now that I just lost everything. So I was personally looking for a way to hack into my biology and energy levels in a beneficial way, truly beneficial way. So that was it for me. I then quickly, as I got into the community, I quickly became aware that, oh, this is really happening. This is entering the zeitgeist. And now people say microdosing for everything, and they do it. There's even been a little bit like something duplicitous about it. A lot of these mushroom brands, they're not entering the psilocybin space yet for a multitude of reasons, of which I understand. But they'll use the term microdosing as like a placeholder for when they can go there. And there's some Amanita muscaria brands that talk about microdosing, but I don't technically think that's a very good mushroom for microdosing. It's a very To sidebar, Amanita muscaria is very subjective in who it's effective for. Psilocybin is a much wider appeal, and we have about a 97% success ratio. Not everybody necessarily reorders, but about 97% of the people who order BrainStream had a pleasant, beneficial experience with them. We have a 60% reorder rate. We have a 60% subscription rate. So, like, our products definitely connect with people, like they work. And Amanita muscaria affects your GABA production. So if you're GABA deficient, it can be amazing for you. If you're not GABA deficient, the first 1 or 2 days are kind of interesting, and then you start to get these headaches and so forth. So whatever, that's just me also. Everybody's using the term microdosing, but it historically pertains to psilocybin and LSD. I have not particularly enjoyed microdosing LSD. I find it doesn't have the consistency that psilocybin does. I will microdose LSD, and 2 hours after the microdose, I hardly know it's anything. And all of a sudden, I'm going over an overpass at 4 p.m. and I'm like, "Holy shit! Like, this has real consequences." Like, it kind of hits me all at once. So it's a very kind of uneven experience for microdosing. I don't particularly enjoy it. I hear people talking about microdosing MDMA right now, but that's not a good idea. It messes with your serotonin levels and serotonin production, and there can be some heart palpitations, so forth. MDMA is very effective, therapeutically, and even on occasion, recreationally, so much better than alcohol. And you can connect to your mate, your partner, and what, you know, there's a lot of benefits to it as well. But I don't think it's very good to microdose. I'm a real believer in microdosing psilocybin. And I believe they should be quality mushrooms that are grown well, dehydrated well. I don't believe in single molecule extraction. We don't do any of that nonsense where we isolate psilocybin and we make a microdosing product with a psilocybin isolate. I believe that, you know, God intended these mushrooms as sentient entities to basically help us live fuller, more meaningful, enjoyable lives, so we can then better preserve the environment for them to prosper. I kind of feel that mushrooms use us as much as we're using them, maybe even more so.
Is
Yeah,
there a
that's my.
part of your process wherein you're in a sort of communion, communication, reverence with the psilocybin spirit?
So look, for me personally, one of the really nice long-term benefits of microdosing. So in the film Fantastic Fungi, which is fundamentally about the life and work of Paul Stamets, pre-COVID Paul Stamets, and it deals a lot with the mycelial networks, which are the root fibers that connect they're the information pathways of the forest. They're the biggest living entities of the world, I think 5 square miles in the Pacific Northwest and other areas. And these are old, ancient mushroom root pathways that have been conducting information and nutrients, so forth. They basically can relay information from trees. If there's an insect attack in one area of the forest, that it can relay the information, and another area of the forest will start to produce chemicals to ward off those insects. I even think it relates to the birds of prey that can communicate to the birds of prey to grab a fish. And that this and eat it on this tree because this tree needs the fish guts that are going to fall out the bottom to provide certain nutrients and support. I think it interconnects the whole forest with this mycelial network. One of the long To answer your question, one of the long-term benefits of microdosing for me is I can't honestly say that I'm in connection with like the psilocybin spirit, but I do feel this, what I call this etheric mycelial network that connects me to fellow human beings. Like, from my heart, from my head, I just know, like, okay, now I relay information, now I receive information, you know, now I just listen. Or there's a block right there. This is not the right environment to even attempt to relay information. The quality and depth and intimacy and authenticity and vulnerability of my communication with fellow human beings is so increased. So to answer your question, I can't say like I'm in connection with the psilocybin spirits or anything like that. But what I can say is it's definitely put me in connection with the spirits of my fellow human beings much more so over these cumulative 7 years of microdosing.
I love that. And who's like Who are your primary customers aside from the 55-year-old pickleball players?
Right.
Who else is are your brain supreme devotees?
So I'll tell you what's really interesting about that. So the first, we've been like a real brand for like a little over 2 years. I met Andy Wakefield, you know who he is, so former Dr. Andrew Wakefield, the poster child for pharmaceutical character assassination. He's a friend of mine.
Okay.
He's a huge Brain Supreme fan. So it's I've told the story on other podcasts. We've got like a little more time and so forth. But basically, I had early 2000s. I was teaching at a yoga. This is when liberals could talk about the vaccines and efficacy and potential dangers and so forth. I was working at a yoga studio that hosted a screening of Wakefield's film, and I went, and it was very impactful for me. Made a real impression. He spoke a little bit afterwards, so I knew his life story. 2015, I was on a corner street corner in Studio City, California, LA. At a Starbucks, having a cannabis meeting with a guy, and out walked Andy Wakefield, and I jumped up, and he was like, "Uh-oh, this is the guy." I'm like, "No, you're not getting murdered." I shook his hand. I said, "I know all about you. God bless you. I love you. You're doing God's work." 2 years ago, I'm at a coffee shop here in Austin, Texas, and standing in front of me, I'm like, "Andy Wakefield," and he turns around, and he's like, he had this look like embarrassed, like, "I don't know you." I'm like, "No, I'm a fan." And I was interviewing a guy to develop for marketing and to develop my website potentially. And I rattle off Andy's Wakefield very quickly to the guy. And he's like, "Wow, you really do know me." I'm like, "Dude, I'm telling you, I'm a fan. And I literally think like my second child, if we didn't know about you, like probably could have been autistic, like later birth, you know, health bubble." And he was very touched. And he says, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, Brain Supreme, blah, blah, blah." And he's like, "Oh, I'm very interested in that." And I reached down in my knapsack and I gave him 2 packs. I'm like, "Here you go, man. God bless you. You know, you're doing God's work and all about you. You know, my pleasure." And he's like, "Oh, thanks." And they says, "Can I get your phone number in case I want to order more?" So I give my phone number. 4 days later, I get a phone call from him at 9 a.m. and he's like ecstatic. And I at that point, I was only hand selling. We didn't have the website up, and I would always check back in with customers, but I'd give it like a week or 10 days. He calls me immediately. He's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Yeah, Andy." He's like, "You got a minute?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "You know I make movies." I said, "Yeah, I've seen a documentary." He goes, "No, also fiction. And I write fiction." He goes, "10 years ago, I wrote the best piece of fiction in my life. I've never had an ending for it. It sits in a drawer in my office and torments me every day of my life." He goes, "I woke up at 4 a.m. with the ending complete in my mind. I just finished writing. It's the best thing I've ever done. And the only thing I'm doing different is I'm on day four of genius, Brain Supreme." He said, "When can I get more? And you need to meet my son." So now Andy and I are friends. His son, Sam, is the head of marketing and sales for my company and put my whole website together. And he really like made us the real brand because he had the tech savvy and so forth. So it's a great Brain Supreme story. And it's kind of what helped launch us to be kind to become a real brand. Shoot, I lost it. What was the thread there? There was an original question that I was kind of answering
The
in this
original
tangent
question
direction.
was who are your customers
Oh
and who
yes. Okay. Thank you. Great memory. Great recall, by the way. Hey, you know you were going to say if genius is
Brain
working for you?
Supreme.
Yes. That's great. Really, that's great because I was gone. So I had thought that it was going to be like the first people was going to be like the Joe Rogan audience, like open, early adopters, maybe a little bit mainstream, but like thinking about things alternative, very into health, fitness, combat sports, that whole thing. I had thought that. And the first podcast that I got was a guy in Austin here called The Great Unlearn with Cal Callahan, who's now a very good friend of mine, terrific guy. And he's health and wellness, spirituality. I'm like, great. And we did that podcast and we did okay with it. But then because of Andy and Sam, I started to get into the conspiratorial podcast network. And I thought that it was going to be like guys like me, you know, I'm like getting middle age, I gotta go, let's go, I gotta achieve more, I gotta do more. But once we did our first conspiratorial podcast, Sam Tripoli, Tinfoil Hat,
I know Sam.
boom. Sam is amazing. Sam launched my business. We did $123,000 in sales in the 6 days following the Sam Tripoli Tinfoil Hat podcast. So what I have found is it's people kind of like you and I who are in this fringe. We're kind of lost. Like, what the fuck is happening? Like, what happened to our friends? You know, we're adjusting to it now. But like, what? I mean, you 3 years ago, the pharmaceutical industry, and now you're getting a Pfizer tattoo. Like you think Kamala's like not the most full of shit human being ever? Like left right paradigm. Like, what are you like? All this disorientation about what's happening to the world we're living in. Those people. they need the spiritual sustenance that a product like Brain Supreme kind of lends them. And so that's my biggest market. Literally, like the conspiratorial podcast listener who's a little disoriented and unmoored in this reality that we're living in are my number one client base. And that totally surprised me. That came out of nowhere, which is great because, like, those are my people. So,
Totally. I love that.
yes. So that took me by surprise. And now, as you know, we're like a legitimate small business. We're doing quite well. Now I've got Reddit subgroups that are menopausal women who are like, this is saving my life. And I've got postpartum women who are like, this has been so tremendous. I've got veterans and PTSD and major depressive disorder that they'll write me as long as they haven't been on an antidepressant, an SSRI or SNRI for too long, they'll write me that, hey man, I'm 50, 60% better. I'm on day 6 of Brain Supreme and I haven't thought of killing myself for 5 days. Like these types of groups that I had more expected. And now, like as it's getting more into the kind of zeitgeist, of our of what's happening in the world, like now I'm getting like the alpha males, the types who are really trying to achieve and perform, who are looking for a little bit of edge, the group that I thought I would originally get. We're also now getting into the sports world because I developed this performance protocol and people really get it. This one day on, 2 day off, or every other day, or practice day and game day. So now we're kind of becoming like basically what. And functional MDs. I've got like 20 different wellness clinics and functional medicine clinics that sell the product, that keep it behind the counter, but they'll have 50, 60% of their whole patient base at certain wellness clinics on Brain Supreme. So now I'm entering that space that I always thought was going to be my sweet spot. But it started with like, the people, the conspiracy theorists who are like, what happened to the world that I'm living in and what's really going on? They were the first ones who really kind of gravitated to product.
I'm so I feel so validated as a
Yes.
longtime conspiracy theorist. Like, we always know what's going on before anyone else.
True. Really
Were
true.
you so is that what flipped you into the realm of conspiracy and standing in front of a flat earth map, or did you start to delve into those realms of weirdness before Brain Supreme?
So, all right, look, I just turned 55. And like I grew up
Happy
like,
birthday.
thank you. I grew up in a day and age where like as a 16-year-old, like in 1986, like you'd go see a Oliver Stone movie. Like you'd go see Born on the 4th of July or I forget, oh shoot, the other one, Vietnam one, Platoon. So I was like, well, that's fucking weird. Like they killed their own officers. Like that war doesn't make any sense. And like, the Gulf of Tonkin incident was faked. So I've always thought this way. And then in 1998, I was walking down Melrose Boulevard and some gallery owner ran out with a pair of binoculars looking at the sky and he's like, those motherfuckers. And I'm like, what? He's like, that is not normal. And he points to a line in the sky. And he's like, that is called a chemtrail. And I'm like, oh, wow. And he's like, that, if it was a condensation trail, it would dissolve in 30 seconds to maybe 3 minutes. And I was like, oh, shit. That's really interesting. And then I started. Back in the day, remember KPFK before it became like libtarded and
I used to work
ridiculous?
at KPFK. I produced the news.
That's how I kind of know your name as well. Because I was an avid KPFK listener, avid.
Yeah,
And you
right
would
after
get.
9/11, I was doing the news 5 days a week for KPFK.
Yes. I felt very familiar kind of with you. So I was thinking Hollywood Y, but that's it as well. And The Voice. So I was an avid KPFK listener, and like you guys had chemtrail documentaries on, you had vaccine, Amy Goodman was doing such great work, and Jerry Quigley.
Yep.
God, I mean, he would bring up topics and have guests on. Like, so I was really getting hip and exposed to these things, and then I became obsessed with the chemtrail thing. I mean, something seemed wrong. But by the way, victory lap.
Of course.
Everybody's talking about it now.
Yep. It's like literally just this week and last that it's gone totally mainstream. That I've noticed the chemtrail conversation. Like, oh,
Yeah.
finally, you guys catch
Yeah,
up.
finally. Yep, finally. So I was living in Los Angeles when 9/11 happened, but my parents were divorced and I'd split my time between New Jersey and New York City. And then after college, I went back and lived from 92 to 98. Bleecker and Perry in the West Village, and I knew those buildings. And when 9/11 happened, I was like, that doesn't make any fucking sense. And what about Tower 7? Oh, thank God you're not on YouTube, because we'd be gone now. So
exactly. That'd be my last strike.
So people like, forget about the towers. Forget about that they were built to withstand planes hitting them and so forth. What about Tower 7? Like, how did 250 million tons of steel collapse like a perfect pancake from a fire burning a quarter mile away? Like, once that happened, like, all bets were off. Like, I don't believe, I'm suspicious of everything.
Yep.
And, but I would still hold out belief. It, for me, like the proverbial, you know, what is it? Stake in the heart, nail in the coffin, was the COVID and Epstein's Island happening kind of simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
Because, so I don't know, Danny, maybe this theory of mine might be applicable. Maybe this is how you felt as well, because I'm kind of kindred spirits in a way. So before COVID and Epstein's Island, I had two theories of conspiracy. The first theory is one of confluence, that my shitty, greedy idea goes to the Bilderberg or the World Economic Forum, and it confluences with your shitty, greedy idea. A confluence is coming together. Confluences yep. with your shitty, greedy idea, and we can make a bigger, shitty, greedier idea. So that's one, my call, the theory of confluence. And the other is the single origin point, or there's a multitude of single origin point. And this is ancient families, black nobility, you know, whatever satanic shit, you know, the other realms. I mean, who the hell, I don't know where, but there's originating points that these ideas germinate and come from. And the ideas come fully formed and hatched as a plan, and it takes years to execute, and they confluence with other ideas simultaneously, but no, they're single origin points. Pre-COVID and Epstein's Island, I was much more of the confluence theory. After COVID and Epstein's Island, I'm like, so what, you really mean to tell me that there is a place, like Alex Jones was talking about 20 years ago, where the global elites congregate to, I hate to be coarse about it, but let's be honest, to fuck children? And then right. our media and our political institutions protect those perpetrators of those heinous offenses. And then those same people, almost all those same people, got 208 nations of the world to agree upon the world's most dangerous fallacy that's ever existed, and to willingly walk themselves into the gas chamber and inject themselves with a bioweapon. I mean, like all bets are off. Like that's not a confluence. That's a single origin point or multitude of single origin points. So yeah, after that, I became a fucking lunatic. Like I became, because I don't know the things that, I mean, I have my own belief system on things that make us human, okay? But it's vague and it can vary, and you might like one thing and me another, but like I think we can agree on things that are definitely non-human, okay? So like for me, and I speak about it this way because it is this vulgar and this crude, and it should be this rude to your to one's psychology and emotional state, like the fucking of children and the sanctity of human blood, like if you're not about the preservation of those two things, then there's something demonic, satanic, demented that has taken over your consciousness and your beingness.
That does it for the first half of my conversation with Adam Schell. As you are inspired to tune into the second half, which I highly, highly recommend, you can find that on both of my Patreon and Locals communities. At both communities, for as little as $5 a month and as much as, let's cap it at $1 million a month, you get access to all of my second half conversations, plus oodles of bonus content. Plus, I would never cap abundance or wealth. As you are inspired to support me for more than $1 million a month, feel free. I welcome and appreciate such support. And the beauty of supporting me over on Patreon and or Locals is not just that you get access to the second half of this particular conversation and all my conversation. You get that warm, fuzzy, gratifying feeling that comes along with supporting me in keeping on keeping on. Your generous support really allows this show to continue. So thank you so much for supporting me as inspired and aligned for you. One last reminder to sign up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com, and one last reminder that Adam is generously sharing a 15% off promo code with you, me, and all of us. So when you go to brainsupreme.co, not .com, but .co, after you put in your order, be sure to put in promo code DANNYKATZ, all one word, either caps or lowercase, to nab your 15% off. Thank you so much for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that every word matters, that you are omniscopic amazingness. I will see you over on the Locals and the Patreon tribe. Have a rockin' day.